Good morning. This is Adora Fi from Hello from the Magic Tavern, and you're listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future. Bing bong.
Scrolling for August 8th, 2017. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Cotton McKnight.
Just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. This week, you and I, we got a opportunity of a lifetime. We went downtown Chicago. We hung out with Tal Klein and his book presentation for the Punch Escrow. We had a really good time.
We were coming live from Volumes Bookstore, Steve, downtown in the Windy City.
It was great. I had so much fun. We went out for grilled cheese sandwiches and hung out with Tal and Adel from Hello from the Magic Tavern. And we just hung out, had a couple of beers and some grilled cheese sandwiches, talked about life and comedy and writing. These are some fun humans to be a part.
Feats of strength, Steve. Yeah. That's what we'll see this evening.
Is that what we're getting to? We're getting to feats of strength. We're getting to Festivus is among us. We're getting to Festivus already?
It's just a preparation, Steve.
Is there a Festivus in July?
Well,
we should celebrate. We should celebrate half of Festivus.
Festivus 2.
Brings us to our film at 11.
The writing of grievances.
Film at 11. Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week, and I have not seen a single movie this week. It seems like school's coming back in session, and I've got a lot of projects that I'm wrapping up before school starts.
Well, Steve, I saw something last weekend, and then I saw something this morning before we started recording.
All right, so our film at 11, our movie of the week this week is...
Jack Reacher, Steve.
Jack Reacher, Never Go Back.
This stars Tom Cruise.
Of course it does.
My rule on Tom Cruise is I never see him at the theater.
You never go to a movie theater and see a Tom Cruise movie.
But when I see him in person, I tend to go, oh, that was pretty good.
When you see the movies.
Oh, yes, yeah. Yes. All right, so this came out last Halloween-ish time. And this movie is awful. So let's go ahead and just put that right on the table.
Our movie of the week, awful.
Well, it is. It is a bad movie. It's got rotten dialogue. It is made for the international market, is what I think. I think it's meant to be dubbed because it certainly isn't meant
There's
for...
There's a lot of money in the international market.
Well, I don't disagree. And Tom Cruise has a wide following, the idea for stars and things of that nature.
He's handsome. He's short. You can put him in your pocket.
Lots of running.
They love running, and Tom Cruise, if you're going to a Tom Cruise movie, you're going to see Tom Cruise running.
Lots of running. Anyway, this is really bad. I think Cruise needs to find himself something that, like Kevin Spacey finds himself.
He's maturing. He's becoming an older actor, and he needs to find that acting space.
Well, you can find action movies, but it's going to be a different type of role. And this just is, you know, he's playing what should be maybe a 25 or 26 year old guy, maybe 30, but this certainly was not a good role for him. But the deal is that the action sequences are capable, the writing is okay and predictable. It's very wooden. It's not his fault. It's not his cast fault. It's just this movie was made for the international market, and it kind of shows.
And there's a fight scene at the end that's no good.
Lots of blows, Steve.
Lots of blows.
Like somebody blows
500 blows.
I'm going to punch you, and you're going to punch me. I didn't want to give it away, but they keep punching each other a lot.
One at a time.
And that's what they do, because doggone it, it will end with both of us dying at some point.
Wow.
So anyway, not on the highest, on the scale to 1 to 100, 40, 30, something like
wow,
that.
Wow, that's a bigger number than I expected you to say. The way you described it sounded more like a 10 or a 15.
It looks like a made-for-TV movie.
Okay.
So it kind of plays like it, too.
Okay. So. There's nothing wrong with made-for-TV movies.
But I made up for it, Steve.
Yes,
I went
you
for the
did.
Classic.
You went back to the classic 1979 Ridley Scott Alien.
That's right. Now, I have not seen this movie in a long, long time. And I don't know if I've seen this thing from start to end. I know I saw it on television, maybe on HBO or something like that.
Because you grew up with cable, so you had access to movie
once in a while
shows. Yeah.
But I know I've seen parts of it. But I sat down and watched the beginning to the end.
Mm-hmm.
This definitely was one a period piece.
Mm-hmm.
If we think of Jaws being 1976,
mm-hmm.
we think of Star Wars being 1977.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Raiders Lost Ark, 80, 81?
Mm-hmm.
So this was right there.
A piece of that.
It holds up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. At the time, it was it was always billed as this action-packed, scary horror movie.
Right.
Okay, but for today, it's very tame.
Well,
very tame.
That happens with most horror movies. I go back and look at the old 1930s horror movies, those things that were so scary. They had warnings. You know, this comes with a free coffin in case you die. And we look at those things and we go, those are not scary. That's what happens with time, I think.
Well, the body of work and the things that we've seen, obviously, changes us. I guess if I was never exposed to it, maybe it would be much more, there's a cat in this movie, Steve.
And a lot of smoking.
There's a lot of smoking in this.
In space.
Why not? Because,
there's only oxygen all around you.
It's a closed cat.
It's fine.
A couple guys complaining about work conditions and wanting to get paid more.
This was influential. This movie is one of those groundbreaking movies that led to so many other films after this. I actually prefer the sequel, Aliens, which was 1986. I think that is a better film in general, but this is a really good movie. I like these movies a lot.
I'm glad I reviewed it again.
Yeah.
All right. Alien. Let's get going. What's going on this week?
This week we got some classics that will be around for a while, or...
We don't have all the movies out. There's a couple of horror films we're not going to talk about.
Yeah, we're not generally horror movie fans. I know that a lot of our listeners are really into watching horror movies. Man, I watched a horror movie in the dark alone, and it freaked me out.
All right, so we've got movies with crazy families.
Yes, this makes much more sense to me. The first one's called The Glass Castle. This is another dysfunctional family, nonconformist. They don't do normal things. This is quirky.
If you were going to cast a dad in this type of film, who would you cast, Steve?
If I had money, which I don't, I would get Woody Harrelson to be in every movie. Woody Harrelson is one of my favorite actors working right now. This is Woody Harrelson being quirky.
Is this after he's been exposed to the Planet of the Apes virus, Steve?
No, because that would be a spoiler to the Planet of the Apes. But this movie is something that I would love to watch. If you remember back a year or so ago, there was a movie called Captain Fantastic.
It seems very similar.
Yeah.
This is the nonconformist family living the nonconformist lifestyle.
Uh-huh.
And this one may be, when I say a little bit different, there's the piece that I'm picking up from the trailer that looks like the daughter is older, mm-hmm. and is longing to be settled down because dad, with his crazy plans, seems to always be on the go. The kids get ripped up in the middle of the night, mm-hmm. and they're off to some other place.
Yeah, and that's Brie Larson who's playing the daughter. She's an up-and-coming star. She's going to be Captain Marvel in 2019.
Are there any movies that we could watch this week where we would have smelly people, Steve?
The trailer that looks like it smells is Pilgrimage. This is the story of 13th century Irish monks who are escorting a sacred relic across Ireland and wearing really heavy robes and being very dirty and bloody and sweaty. Yes, it looks like this movie smells.
It's called Stinky People.
It's called Pilgrimage. And it features Tom Holland as a very young monk. So
a young stinky person. Well, anyway, this actually looks pretty good.
It does.
I look forward to seeing it when it's streaming or something of that nature.
This is the 1970s. Is this damn dirty apes? All of those people always look smelly.
Lots of sweat.
Lots of sweat in the 70s. There is a dark, dark comedy called Ingrid Goes West. This is a young lady who is stalking someone on social media and moves to Los Angeles to be a part of this Instagram star's life.
Steve, she wasn't invited to the wedding.
Yeah.
What do you bring, Mace?
Yeah, if you want to click on that trailer in our show notes, you'll see what Chip is talking about. This is an unhinged person, a person who thinks differently, who brings a can of mace to a wedding.
It's a comedy, though.
It's so a dark comedy.
There'll be something there.
Yeah. The Only Living Boy in New York is another movie that looks really interesting that's coming out this week. This has an all-star cast. It features a dude.
Star was the former James Bond, Steve.
One of the former James Bonds. Pierce Brosnan is the father in this one. But even more, this one features the dude.
Oh, that's right.
Jeff Bridges giving sage advice to this young man who is in the middle of this situation.
There's a few white Russians that'll be drank during this film.
I'm the dude.
But he's shaved.
He shaved his face. I watched the trailer for this and that's all I could think. Oh, Jeff Bridges giving sage advice. I will watch this movie. It reminds me a little bit of a Woody Allen kind of story. This kid finds out that his father is having an affair and then the kid falls in love with the mistress. That's okay.
And the reason they got all involved in that is because the kid wants to impress the young lady that he is going to spy on, the mistress.
Very convoluted.
Let's just say there's a lot going on, but this actually looks like it would be pretty fun.
It looks interesting enough. Like I said,
an adult film.
Jeff Bridges, Pierce Brosnan, Kate Beckinsale, Cynthia Nixon, Tate Donovan, and Wallace Shawn. That is a list of people in this movie.
All right, there are other movies that come out. They're a little bit lighter, Steve.
If you're looking for a laugh, The Trip to Spain is opening this week. This is Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon. It is not a documentary, but it is a movie about two guys named Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon who take a trip to Spain.
And they eat and they review stuff.
And they have fun adventures, but it's not a documentary. This is acting. This is a drama.
Yeah, Steve Coogan's one of my favorites. Yeah. He plays the best goofy guy. It's not quite the same goofy guy that Will Ferrell plays.
Right.
But Hamlet 2 would be a good example. Yes. Didn't everybody die in the first one?
Yeah.
Yes. What's the twist? Time travel. just bring it in.
This seems like a really fun trip. Like, hey, let's go to Spain. Okay, how are we going to fund this trip to Spain? Well, let's film a movie while we're there.
This is the third part of a series of movies. So there are other ones. If you watch this, and it is light, it is fun. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you'll say, oh, maybe I'll pick up the other two.
There you go.
There we go. But hey, what if it's Monday night really dark, Steve?
Monday night, August 14th, you need to get yourself to your local theater. Our friends at Fathom Events are doing it again. We have a exclusive view of a new movie called Batman and Harley Quinn on Monday.
Mr. J.
Oh, man. I look forward to this one so much.
This is a cartoon.
This is the cartoon, Chip. This is Batman the Animated Series getting another episode. Batman the Animated Series was on TV in 1992. It was canceled in, I don't know, 95 or so. But they are making another episode of Batman the Animated Series here. This is written by Bruce Timm. This is voiced by Kevin Conroy.
The Batman himself.
The Batman. For my money, Kevin Conroy is my Batman.
I can understand that. For a lot of people, he is the Batman voice.
He is the Batman voice.
And Bruce Timm's The Batman Animated Series became The Batman.
I totally get it.
And, you know, like what Adam West was to me.
No offense to Adam West. I enjoy Adam West's work, but this is Batman to me. We've got Melissa Rauch as the voice of Harley Quinn. You might know her from The Big Bang Theory. And we've got Lauren Lester, the voice of Robin from Batman the Animated Series, is back as Nightwing in this one.
Well, there you go.
I look forward to this one. It's on my calendar. We're going to go see this movie on Monday. Join us at your local theater. Go to fathomevents.com to find out more information about that one. Book it.
Book it.
Brings us to our book it, our book of the week. And boy, there's so much history. There's so many things that we can take a look at and look at one little piece of the history of the world and see a broader view of things.
I think we're in a wonderful time because we have a lot of people who have a lot of interest, which means we get interesting stories.
And there's so much information.
All right. And so we're going to introduce Bill Shelley.
Bill Shelley.
And he's an Eisner Award-winning author. He wrote Harvey Kurtzman, the man who created Mad Magazine, mm-hmm. and the revolutionized humor in America. He won the Best Comics-Related Book in 2015. He also has written books on Joe Kubert and Otter Bender and a whole bunch of other topics. Mm-hmm. And we actually reviewed one of his books earlier this year, and I'll have that linked in our notes.
Yeah, go back to our show notes and find that show from January where we read one of Mr. Shelley's books. And now...
Welcome, Bill Shelley.
We get to talk to Mr. Shelley. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. It's great to be here, guys.
Thank you for joining us. We're excited to talk to you today.
So our most recent book is John Stanley, Giving the Life to Little Lulu. And what we should probably start with is, why did you write this book?
Well, I wrote about this book because, you know, after all, Little Lulu was one of the biggest selling, best selling American comic books in the late 40s and 50s. Very little has been known about John Stanley, the man who wrote and essentially drew every story from 1945 to 1959.
Well, who is Little Lulu?
Well, Little Lulu was a fictional 8-year-old girl who was first introduced in a cartoon panel in the Saturday Evening Post, which was one of the most popular magazines of the 20s and 30s when the great American magazines were so popular that just about every American home got the Saturday Evening Post. And she debuted in February of 23rd, 1935, and ran for about 10 years, and was created by a woman named Marjorie Buell, and it instantly became a big hit in this weekly magazine.
So can you give us a little overview of what was the story of Little Lulu?
Well, of course, it was a single panel each week, and it was wordless. So all the gags were visual gags. Little Lulu was sort of a mischievous little girl who shook up the world around her in a very creative way. For example, in the debut strip, she's a flower girl at a wedding, and instead of throwing flower petals before the bride, she throws banana peels. And so that was her mode. And in many of the gags, she challenges the idea of male superiority. You know, she's like... She's considered kind of a pre-feminist figure in a sense because she always wanted to be part of the club, the boys' club, and the boys didn't want to let her in. And this is something John Stanley continued in a big way in the comic books.
Well, in fact, tell us a little bit about John Stanley.
Oh, well, you know, not very much was known about him for all these years, really. And I got interested because I knew there was a fairly large cult following for him among people who gathered together annually to celebrate his work at the San Diego Comic-Con and everything. But how to find out about him? And what happened was I just finished my Harvey Kurtzman biography, which was such a massive project. I mean, it was just, it's like a doorstop, let's face it. And... it's a thick book, and I just wanted something that maybe wasn't going to be so thick and so challenging, but would be equally interesting. And so I started by contacting John Stanley's son, Jim Stanley, who began to warm up to me and gradually helped me with the book, although he was born late in his dad's life, so he wasn't around when his father was even drawing comics much, because his father retired at a certain point. That's how I got into it. And as I got into it more and more, I talked to other relatives of John Stanley, found about his life, his early life. He was born in 1914 in New York City in an Irish Catholic family. So he wasn't the typical, as we study the history of comics, we realize how many creators of comics were Jewish.
Sure.
Well, John Stanley was an Irish Catholic.
Hmm.
And he was a talented cartoonist as a boy, and he finished his schooling in New York City at Parsons, which is now called the New School for Design, I think. But it was then in early 30s, and still is one of the premier art schools in the country. And he actually got a scholarship to study there for 2 years. But then it was the Depression, his scholarship ran out, and he had to find work. He was working as an animator and in commercial art. He did one of the first Walt Disney Mickey Mouse watches. Then he, in the early 40s, when all the cartoonists were getting drafted, he was 4F because he had a collapsed lung, and he ended up working for Dell Comics doing things like Tom and Jerry and Andy Panda and Woody Woodpecker, and he ended up turning out to be even a better writer than he was a cartoonist. So when Marjorie Buell decided to sell Little Lulu to Dell Comics, when she decided she wasn't going to do the panel for the magazine anymore, John Stanley's editor decided he was the best man to adapt this idea of a little girl into a comic book. But that's why I call my book Giving Life to Little Lulu, because there's a big difference between what you have in a single panel wordless cartoon and a comic book with continuing stories where she has to speak, for one thing, and where she has to have other friends. And he invented all the characters in the comic books except for Lulu and her best friend, Tubby.
Well, in fact, let me ask you, I know John Stanley, you were saying about his writing, he was a storyboard writer. So he wrote uniquely. Did he write out scripts too, or did he strictly use the storyboard, or do you know?
Well, of course, this is one of the most interesting things about him. Of course, he had worked in animation, so he did have a storyboard-type background. But the thing is, he would take an 8.5x11 sheet of paper and draw and fold it once and then fold it twice, and so he'd create four rows of panels. And then with a pencil, he would just start writing the story and drawing it as if he was really drawing the story. And he'd write the dialogue in the balloons as he went along, just rough drawings.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would just follow the story and where it took him. He never had an ending planned. And he was such a talented, intelligent guy that the endings would always seem to be just perfect. And he worked in this very spontaneous manner with these storyboards. So he didn't use a typewriter to type any scripts at all, ever. He always drew them out as if he was drawing like a little amateur comic book, but the work was so, it had all the essence of what the artist needed to look at and then do a finished version of it. Although Stanley did draw the first three or four issues of Little Lulu himself completely, the finished art.
Wow.
But after that, other artists would take his storyboard, or it wasn't really a storyboard, it was really just like a sketched comic book, and then would just redraw it in finished form, and then a letterer would finish it and everything. So that's how he worked.
And all of these drawings and all of these stories were well received in the public, right?
Well, yeah, what happened was Little Lulu, the first comic book, which came out just before the end of World War II, was a huge hit. And so within a very short period of time, she was kind of in a comic book that was sort of like Dell's Showcase, where they did tryouts or they did one-shots. It's called Four Color. But within about 10 issues, she broke out into her own title. And, it's very unusual for a comic book to sell a million copies an issue. There aren't very many comic books that have done that. You know, Captain Marvel did during World War II. Walt Disney's comics and stories, Superman at his peak, probably. But Mad, I think, eventually got very close to a million. Little Lulu sold, they printed a million or more copies of every issue of Little Lulu through the 50s. And it was one of the most successful, popular comic books with kids. And, of course, a lot of kids had them read to them by their adult parents, and their parents, there's a lot of comedy in Little Lulu to appeal to an adult in a way, because it's very clever.
And that's my favorite kind of entertainment for families, is where there's something for the child to understand, and then there's another layer for the adult.
Does John Stanley have other works that were as well received, or big works?
Well, of course, he, like I said, he did all of the Little Lulu stories for 15 years. But he did other work for Dell Comics too. But it was less, and it was more to pay the bills, and it was all very good. But you know, he did other things for them. Like I said, Woody Woodpecker. He did. They tried to revive Crazy Cat. He did that. He did a Howdy Doody comic book. I mean, he did whatever they asked him to do. Sure. When he was finished with his Lulu and Tubby work. But none of that rose to the creative level. Now, later in the 60s, he did some comic books that he wrote himself and drew himself, and they had many virtues. They were a lot of fun, like Melvin Monster, mm-hmm. and 13 Going on 18, which a lot of these comics are fondly remembered, but they were not tremendously successful because, you know, Dell in the 60s was kind of struggling to come up with a whole new comic book line. After they lost the Disney characters, and Stanley came up with these, and they're very good, but they weren't as popular as Little Lulu. Somehow, Little Lulu just rings the bell in a way that nothing else he ever did was able to.
There was some tragedy in John Stanley's life. Can you tell us about his life?
You know, the thing is, John Stanley was not an average, unique, everyday kind of a guy. He was a handsome young man. The girls loved him and everything, but he was moody, and he later admitted that from about the age of 17 he started experiencing depression. And he also came from an Irish family, and of course the alcohol was flowed freely in the Irish community in New York. Let's put it that way. I don't want to cast aspersions on Irish people or anything, but this was just a fact. And mm-hmm. in his 20s and 30s, he ended up drinking a lot and really became an alcoholic. Now, he was what you'd call a high-functioning alcoholic, in the sense that he would always meet his deadlines. He was very controlled and very professional at that in the 40s and 50s and so on. I think he was having more trouble as it got worse in the 60s. And then he also had the issues with his lungs, and he suffered from headaches. So he was a man who's plagued by all these demons, and yet he created one of the greatest comic books in the history of comics.
And his influence is still felt today. Do you see any influences on any of the material since John Stanley's time?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I think he influenced a lot of comic book creators and cartoonists, but, it's kind of like Peanuts. You know, Peanuts was unique, and it's hard to say that Peanuts directly influenced anybody, but its influence was felt by many cartoonists who would maybe add a more psychological aspect to their work or whatever. And I think John Stanley, like Charles Schulz, he showed that children could be complex, interesting, fully human characters, not little simpering characters or whatever, but they were characters that could be unhappy, they could be frustrated. And so he humanized children in a way that, wasn't always apparent in a lot of other portrayals of children in media. And I think that influence is still with us, very much so. But as far as anything being like Little Lulu now, I wouldn't say there is. Of course, Dark Horse Comics reprinted a lot of Little Lulu. So from the year 2000 to about 2015, they put out about 30 books reprinting John Stanley. So it's not like Little Lulu isn't hasn't been available in more recent years in its original form. And these books they finished their series, but they're around. But otherwise, I would say that when you have a talent as unique as John Stanley, is nobody can quite do John Stanley like him. So I would say that, you know, I would recommend anybody who's interested in him to try to find one of these reprint books from Dark Horse. Or, you know, you can get for $5, you can get a reading copy of an old little Lulu comic books from the days when it was 52 pages. And the 52 pagers are the best ones. They stopped in 1954, but the 52 pagers are a little better than the ones that came from 54 to 59, when he was still doing great work, but it wasn't as inspired as it was before 1954. So that's just a little word to the wise. And, you know, one thing I'd like to add, if I could, you know, I was a superhero fan for most of my comic book collecting career in the 60s and the 70s. And of course I branched out into other things, but, and I had read some Little Lulu, but, you know, for many years I kind of looked down on, you know, the Uncle Scrooge comics and the Little Lulu and things like that. And what I've discovered is just once you start reading Little Lulu, it just opens up for you, and it is just so much, so enjoyable, that once you get past any resistance you have thinking, well, I've got to read it, it's got to be a superhero or something, they're just terrific comic books to read and enjoy.
That's fantastic. So the book is called John Stanley Giving Life to Little Lulu. And Bill Shelley, thank you so much for coming in and telling us all about all of your work.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure talking to you guys.
Well, we look forward to seeing your future works. And
do you have anything interesting in the works right now? Is there any book that you're working on?
Always, always. Well, I finished another book after that, which is my memoir of being in Phantom in the 60s and how that led to my writing career in the present day, called Sense of Wonder, My Life in Comic Fandom, The Whole Story. And that will be published in April of 2018. And it's got a lot of, it's basically a memoir about a guy who's in fandom and what life was like in the 60s in fandom and how that kind of gave me the tools I needed to have this career now.
So if our listeners want to find that and all of the rest of your works, do you have a website? Are you on social media?
Well, yes, I have a website. It's Bill Shelley, BILLSCHELLY.net. Also, you can type my name in, go to Amazon, type my name, and see all my books listed there.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming in and talking to us about this wonderful history that we have.
Thanks a lot.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it, and boy, oh boy, oh man, you know, everything old is new again.
Well, you know, back in 2004, there was a movie called Dodgeball.
Yes.
A true underdog story. It starred Ben Stiller, it starred Vince Vaughn, and it seems to keep popping up.
It just won't die. This is a movie that just won't go away, 13 years on.
So one of the jokes in it is there was a couple of announcers, Cotton McKnight and Pepper Brooks, played by Cotton McBride was Gary Cole, which Gary Cole's one of my favorite actors. He played Brady in the Brady Bunch movie, Mike Brady. He also was the boss in Office Space.
I'm going to need you to come in on Saturday. I'm going to need those TPRS reports.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, he seems to show up in many things. He's got a great voice.
Yes.
And they were announcers on the Dodgeball tournament that was on television.
It was broadcast on ESPN.
Well, ESPN 8, the Ocho.
Oh, ESPN 8, relegated to the 8th version of ESPN.
Well, ESPN 8, at least for a day, is going to become a reality.
Today's the day.
You know, at some point, you got to plug in a movie from 2004.
This is August 8th. It's 8/8/2017, and you can tune in to ESPN, the Ocho, today.
So the joke on this was that there were 8 networks, and by the time you got to the 8th, it was Dodgeball. And all the other sports that are just odd and unique.
Unique sports.
All right, so today we have on ESPN 8, which is ESPNU, if you've got cable or you've got satellite.
Or whatever access you have. Like, I've got the YouTube TV, so I have access to this, so I'm going to be able to watch all of these sports today.
Steve, there's going to be a cornhole tournament. With announcers, of course.
With announcers. I'm sure the announcers are going to be fantastic.
Roller Derby Championship.
Roller Derby's getting big, especially here in Chicago.
Firefighter World Challenge.
That sounds interesting.
And Trampoline Dodgeball.
You've watched like the Lumberjack competitions,
absolutely.
Right? Those are entertaining.
All right, so when ESPN started, I don't know, 79, 80, whenever it did, they didn't have any rights to any sports.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have the rights to college basketball or NBA or football or anything. So they were out there truly finding like these unique sporting mm-hmm. events so they could announce them and they could, you know, build their network. It's a powerhouse now. It's losing subscribers, whatever it is. This is just a way for them to get noticed. There's going to be a lot of playfulness. You should probably turn in at some point today.
Yeah, it would be fun to put on ESPNU, which will for one day be the Ocho.
The Ocho. It's going to be bigger than the World Series, bigger than the World Cup. There's bigger than World War II combined.
Combined. What a silly movie from 13 years ago that we still talk about. The future is wide open in front of us, and a lot of things are going to change. Amazon is getting big, Chip. They are hiring.
They are hiring. So as some of the other retailers lay off people,
mm-hmm.
Amazon is still expanding. They're looking to hire about 100,000 people.
100,000 full-time positions in the next 12 months. That is a really big number.
And they're hiring here in the Chicago area,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, there was a job fair.
That was a big, big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the only job that's available, Steve. There are other jobs available. NASA wants us. What do they need us for, Steve?
They need us to protect the Earth, to defend the Earth from aliens. This is a real, honest-to-God job that NASA is putting out there, and they need a few good men.
Well, what I was thinking is we got Bruce Willis already protecting us from meteors.
He's on the asteroids and meteors. Yeah,
okay, just in case something comes.
Yeah.
What if we got Will Smith?
Get Will Smith. He'll be the face of the job, and we'll have Tommy Lee Jones in the back being the actual muscle actually defending the Earth from
aliens, Steve.
Aliens.
So we've got that going for us. By the way, it pays six figures. It's a good place to start.
Yeah.
So we need you right now.
I'm ready. I'm ready.
Science seems to be providing many things to us, Steve. What are they bringing to us this week?
This is a kind of surprising story, to me at least. IBM and Sony have been working on a new magnetic tape media that they can store 25 gigabytes of information per square inch on something that looks like VHS tape.
All right, so that doesn't mean anything to anyone.
Oh, the aliens made perfect sense.
That's right. What it means to me is that you pretty much can... Storage is free.
Storage is free. Just everybody from now on, just assume that whatever product you're making, assume that data storage is virtually free. And please run on the assumption that bandwidth is virtually free, because we're going to get there in the very near future. This storage technology is stunning in that it can store 330 terabytes of data on one cassette the size of a VHS tape.
So as my wife would say, almost enough to put all the photos on.
Oh, yeah. You can get most of your photos on one VHS tape. Now, that's about the equivalent of 7 Blu-ray discs. So
isn't that amazing?
That is amazing. What's amazing to me is that we're still working on magnetic tape.
No kidding.
Like, we at the consumer level, we have eschewed any magnetic tape. You haven't touched
it. How many cassettes do people pick up today?
Not very many. It's kind of a joke,
yeah.
But that is still the easiest way to store mass quantities of data.
Sure, sure.
Stunning.
All right, but that's not all, Steve.
Oh, there's more science.
Steve, self-assembling DNA-based sunscreen
uh-huh.
is coming your way.
Can you imagine? Okay, let's stop right there before we get into the ridiculous part. Self-assembling sunscreen. You squirt a little bit of sunscreen, and it does the rest. It self-assembles on your skin.
Well, you know, they say that Disneyland is the happiest place on Earth. I'm going to differ, Steve. I'm going to differ.
Yeah.
You know why?
Yeah, I do know why. You're going to have to say it, though.
This sunscreen was derived from salmon sperm.
Yes.
And I think those farms with the salmon have the happiest place on Earth.
The happiest fish on Earth.
They have a lot of naps, Steve. Lots and lots of naps.
What's the name of the farm? Happy Endings? Is that the name of the farm?
That's the name of the product.
That's the name of the product. On the shelf.
Look what the salmon do for you, Steve.
Hey, Junior, hand me that bottle of self-assembling DNA-based sunscreen.
Just rub it all over your body.
Dad, you mean the salmon sperm? Yeah, son.
Yes, just rub it all over your body. It self-assembles. It will protect your skin.
Beyond the funny part, this is stunning science.
I don't get it. It doesn't sound funny to me. It sounds natural.
It's perfectly natural. This is
somebody had to discover this.
Somebody
Steve.
Had to think of this. All scientific discoveries. Somebody somewhere had to go. You know,
we've got all this salmon fillets. What are we going to do with the salmon sperm?
What should we do with all this product?
Let's make sunscreen. All right. So there we go. That's a wonderful thing. That's not the only wild thing happening this week, Steve. Sometimes we like beer when we have sunscreen on.
Man, I don't know. School is starting next Tuesday. I might be out of the lounging with my self-assembling DNA-based sunscreen and drinking a beer time.
Exactly. You know what would make a good beer? Meat.
How about fried chicken?
Fried chicken will work.
Fried chicken. Everything is fried chicken.
So down in Richmond, Virginia,
there is a brewer called the Vale Brewing Company. They worked in collaboration with another brewing company called Evil Twin Brewing, which is funny in and of itself. Right there, you got funny enough that this brewing company is going to work with somebody called Evil Twin.
Exactly. It probably has a mustache and facial hair.
You don't have to write in, folks. Those of you who wrote in last week when we talked about the people with beards are evil. No, this is not necessary.
No, they're part of the Civil War.
It's just how we. It's just
the old Civil War beards.
It's just how we show that somebody is evil on TV.
You remember Spock, evil Spock.
He has a goatee. He must be evil.
This is not the only unique flavor they've tried in the past, Steve. Frozen pizza was one flavor, and the flavor of money.
Yeah, actually trying to make your beer taste like money.
Cold hard cash.
Cold hard cash. This is delicious. I'm a purist when it comes to beer and coffee. I want my coffee flavored. I want my beer flavored. I'm not sure that I'm in for a fried chicken flavored beer.
Steve, they were inspired by sitting at a Cracker Barrel eating chicken strips.
Of course. As one does.
And they said, you know, what if we put fried chicken flavor in beer?
Do you think they tried grits first? Because that's what I think of when I think of Cracker Barrel. It's just a big bowl of grits.
You could probably make
a mash with grits.
That's right. It's
sure,
corn.
It's corn. It's just the same.
Anyway, so if you want to try some, head on down to the brewery in Richmond, Virginia, and eat your fried chicken.
And drink it, too. There's some great people making some great things out there. Science keeps going, and the science of beer certainly is a piece of that.
We want to thank Bill Shelley for coming on today.
Yeah. Thank you, man. That was a fun conversation about the history and all the things that led up to where we're at today. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
Only if we can defend the Earth from the aliens while drinking our fried chicken.
The end of the
beer.
World is coming. There's an eclipse coming, Steve.
Yeah. I my hotel room is booked. I've got my fancy glasses. I am ready. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio, and you can go there and give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. It helps. Every review helps. We would really appreciate if you do that for us. If you want to buy us a beer, you can go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/TooMuchScrolling, and buy us a chicken-flavored beer. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Cotton McKnight, representing the Ocho.
See you in the future.